This is Daniel Dickinson for UN News. A woman chef in New Orleans in the United States has been telling UN News how the restaurant business, and cooking in particular, has been a lifelong labour of love for her. Roseanne Rostoker decided she wanted to be a chef at age 14 and ultimately opened her own restaurant 9 years ago. She spoke to the International Labour Organization as part of a photography project to mark the centenary of the establishment of the UN agency. The project, called Dignity at Work, the American Experience, documents the working life of people across the United States. Kevin Cassidy, the director of the ILO's office for the US, sat down with her following a busy shift at her restaurant, Red Gravy, in New Orleans.
We moved here in 2010, my boyfriend and I.
Right.
And he gave up his law practice to come down here and do this with me. I always wanted a restaurant since the time I was 10 years old. My mom had gone back to work. It was 1972. And prior to that, it was a one-income family. My father worked. My mother was home. But come, you know, the 70s, if you wanted things, it was time for the moms to go to work. And she did. I had an older brother who was baseball, football, paper route, all that that kept him out of the house. A younger sister that I had to come home and watch and get dinner started, which I loved doing. I didn't mind at all. I used to watch Julia Child and The Galloping Gourmet. Everybody else is watching Bugs Bunny and any other thing that's on. But I learned how to make a roux when I was 10 years old, and I didn't even know what I was doing. I just knew that I could make brown gravy better than my mother. I knew that. And it got to the point where I was giving my mother the shopping list. I'm too young to go to the market. I said, get me this, this, that, and the other thing. And they were coming home to meals that were, you know, they were good. I thought I was doing well. And then when I wanted to go to cooking school in high school, in Bergen County, they had a vocational high school.
All right.
You could go to the public high school, you could go to a parochial high school, or you could go to the vocational school, which was called Bergen Tech. And that was where I wanted to go. I knew what I wanted to do when I was 14 years old, but they said, no, you can't go there. That's no job for a woman. So I went to a parochial high school, segregated from the boys, which I didn't care for at all. And that was the direction that I went. When it came time to go to college, I asked again, can I go to Johnson & Wales? Can I go to the Culinary Institute? But my mom worked at Fairleigh Dickinson University in Teaneck, and as a result, we could all go to college there for free. So blue-collar family, it's either we're going to spend money on the middle child to go to cooking school and follow some pipe dream, or we're all going to go to Fairleigh Dickinson. And I went to Fairleigh Dickinson, and I was going to be an English teacher, all things. What can I do that gets me out of an office? Because I knew I didn't want to be in an office.
Right.
And I went to school, to college, for a semester and a half before I dropped out. I had gotten engaged young, when I was about 19 years old. And once my future husband and I had decided that we were going to get married, I said, well, you know what? I don't want to be an English teacher. I know I don't want to do that. So I quit and I went to work for a newspaper doing classified ads. We got married. We had our children. This was the mid-80s. And in the late 80s, early 90s, when it was time for me to go back to work because my kids were old enough that they didn't need round-the-clock care,
sure,
and we could do daycare, I got a job at a company called DECA, I think it was called, working at the corporate kitchen of UPS.
Mm.
So it's my first job as a professional cook. I lied in the entire resume. I said I had a catering business. I said I did pies for the holidays. But I knew how to do it. I just had to get my foot in the door. And it just so happened that it was a female chef who maybe wanted to give me a chance, but she hired me. And then I'm like, okay, if I'm going to talk the talk, I need to walk this walk. And within 6 months, I was her sous chef. So I pulled it off. And we kept going. We worked together for a year at that particular account, and it was a brand new kitchen. Everything was shining and sparkling and worked. and everything you wanted, there was three and four of. And then we lost that account because, as is with corporate dining, they're always bringing in new clients and you lose the accounts and then you go work someplace else. So we went from this beautiful corporate kitchen of the United Postal Service, UPS, to Ramapo College. And I think the kitchen was 500 years old. The grease was certainly 500 years old. The mice were 500 years old. And I took one step into that kitchen. I'm like, well, where's the shiny stuff? And there wasn't anything. Everything was broken. The offices were small. It smelled bad. She left for another thing, and they gave me the account. So now I'm running this account a year and a half after I first walked into a kitchen. And I'm managing a $1.2 million account. I have no idea what I'm doing when it comes to the numbers. I had to be taught how to take an inventory, and I just kept moving up that ladder. I never wanted to stay what they hired me as. They hired me to make tuna salad, chicken salad, and egg salad, and then from 11 o'clock until 3 o'clock, work the deli line, making sandwiches for people. Some weird combinations. I mean, there are people who put onions and mayonnaise and salami on a tuna sandwich, and I've eaten some weird shit. I mean, I had two babies. I know what it's like to eat some weird stuff. But, you know, I'm like trying to smile as I'm preparing. You want what on your sandwich? And the whole New York in me is coming out. I left that for a little while. I don't know how honest you want me to be on this thing, but I did leave the cooking industry for a little while to become New York City's most vicious dominatrix. And I did that for about 5 years. I worked out of a studio in New York on West 24th for a while, but I didn't like the commute and I didn't like sitting around and waiting to get picked. I don't like authority and I don't like somebody to look at me and say, no, 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 I want somebody else. So I went into business for myself and I turned the family basement into a dungeon / studio. Told my kids, never come downstairs. And this is no place for you.
Right.
And I continued to do that until 9/11. And then all the disposable income in New York just dried up. Nobody wanted to spend money on frivolity if we might be going to war at any minute. And I got that, and I was older. I wasn't young like the regular dominatrixes who were like 28 and would do anything. I was in my mid to late 30s at this point. So I did that for a while, decided, okay, I can't keep doing this. I'm too old. I'm certainly not going to just do anything these guys ask. And I also wanted a lot of money. I was getting almost $300 an hour to do this. So talk about hitting the lottery. I went back to work in the kitchen for half of what I had been making 8 years earlier. But I very quickly worked myself right back up again because I wasn't going to stay at that same level. And by the time I left to move here, I moved here in 2010, the last cooking job I'd had was the executive chef at the New York Stock Exchange. And I left that to go to the County College of Morris to be the director of the account. Because I wanted to learn the back of the house a little bit. I wanted to learn the office. I knew how to cook. I knew how to run an establishment, but I needed to make sure that I was compliant with the IRS and all that. So I did that for about almost a year, and that was when my husband and I had divorced. We were married about 25 years, and my boyfriend and I had decided to move here to New Orleans. Let's do something different. He was the state deputy attorney general in Pennsylvania, and I had a house that I'd raised my kids in who had already moved out of. I said, yeah, sure, let's sell the house. So my husband and I split the sale of the house. He wisely invested his money. And I took my check and came down here and did this. So I have no money left, but I also have no debt, you know.
Right.
And we've been here 9 years. We're actually number one on TripAdvisor for a while. That's all about the algorithms as well.
Yeah, sure.
The more you get reviewed, the higher your numbers. But once you're around someplace for as long as I've been, we've been here a little more than 9 years. We're in our 10th year now. We still have 4.5 stars. When it comes to the service industry, I think it's like the funeral homes. Mm. You're always going to need them. People are always going to die and people have to eat. Not everybody wants to concentrate on cooking. So I don't think there's a big fear of anything happening to restaurants. They could potentially become automated where maybe you don't need your service staff. But unless you want to go in the kitchen and get your dish and set your own table and pour your own drink, you need the service staff. The service industry, I don't think, is ever going to be in any danger. I said people have to eat, people are going to die. Those are the things that we never have to worry about. But what we do back there is a labor of love, and if you don't love cooking, why do it? You know, you may as well just paint chalk on the sidewalks and do something that makes you happy. My Facebook page says I'm an artist with clay because I make the pottery.
Oh really?
Yeah, I do. I did that thinking it would be something I could do that wasn't about the restaurant, and then I started bringing it into the restaurant, and now we sell it over there as well. So
that's fantastic.
It's just, you know.
Because you don't have enough things to do.
I know. Even on our day off, we're working at the farmer's market. We get one day off. We were at the farmer's market all day yesterday.
Really?
I love this. I get a bad review, I take it personally, and I cry. I can't help it. It's just the way it is, because how could you say we don't love what we do when we're blood, sweat, and tears back there? And you just don't get us if you can actually say, eh. Or meh about this place. It's very different.
Sure.
This is like my house. And when I tell you my house looks like this, it really does. It's like a carnival.
I mean, we talked about technology, and I agree with you. There's like electricians and plumbers. I mean, you know, robots are not coming to do those jobs either. Right? There's a service economy. Something you have to do, you know, with your hands. And cooking is very different, right? I mean.
You have to do it. You have to feel it. Because every batch of pasta dough feels different depending on how humid it is in there. Same thing with the tomatoes. They don't all grow the same. So.
Yeah. Exactly.
We have to.
But technology does help you. You mentioned Yelp, right? So you get the reviews online, which drives business here. You mentioned about doing the back office work, so learning maybe Excel spreadsheets and how to do the Quicken Books or whatever it is that you do. Do you feel that the technology in the future will continue to help you in that way, but not on the sort of the labor of love of making the food
itself? I can only hope that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to be true. Otherwise, we're just going back to, you know, two sticks to make fire. I mean, we all have lighters back there. We have immersion blenders that you could never make a cream soup that's gluten-free without an immersion blender. You need to be able to grind up vegetables instead of using the roux that I know how to make so well. You've got salamanders to broil things up top without having to take up your stove. I mean, it's only going to get better. I just hope that there are programs and education for everybody to be able to afford to learn to perfect their craft. You know, if you can't take a class or you can't afford to buy that salamander for your kitchen, somebody else is going to have it, and you're going to be back there trying to brulee something like you saw me do with a little fire. But if I had a salamander, I wouldn't need to play with fire like that.
You have grown children now.
I do. Yep.
Do you worry about their future and what work means to them? I mean,
Well, they've chosen paths that, again, people are pretty much always going to need. My son does web design. And as long as there are computers or some sort of social media thing, he'll have a job. And he's been with the same company for 10 years now. And he wants to go out on his own. So he created his own website. And people see the work that he puts together, they'll hire him. I'm not worried about him. My daughter does event planning for a cosmetic company, big cosmetic company in New York. And when I heard what that little girl makes a year, I'm like, ooh, Dolly, you make more money than me. But people are always going to have parties. You know, they'll always have parties, whether it's a holiday event or it's some gigantic convention center event. And the older she gets, the better she'll get at what she's doing. She knows more things about the phones and the computers than I ever will, because They all were born with these things in their hands. And when they handed us computers, you remember, they were as big as these tables. And you had to figure that out. So I don't really worry about what they do, because they're artists in their own ways. And people will always need art. And exactly. Nothing can create art except people.
And when you said earlier, you said that, you know, like when your husband said, yeah, do what you like to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And sort of maybe, you shouldn't say empowered you, because you didn't need to be empowered. You just needed to be, you know, not to feel like you're doing something that maybe your partner did not want
right.
you to do. So with your kids, what, did you do the same thing for them? Did you empower them to?
Absolutely.
You know,
thank you.
They know
I love
well.
My tea in the afternoon.
So what did you do with your kids when you were raising them that made them make those right choices for themselves?
I think it was just the rotating group of people we always brought in the house. Once I went into this demi-monde in New York, and my husband was involved in his own way as well, we started meeting people that were free thinkers and free spirits and were not conventional in any way, shape, or form. And introducing my kids to people like that instead of small-minded suburban family values, they just grew up understanding that the world is at your beck and call, and you get do whatever you want. And there was nothing they were going to say that we were going to say, no, don't do that. There was not a thing. And they knew that. They both knew that. When my daughter wanted to move to New York at 18, I was terrified. I thought she was too young. But I was never going to say no, because I knew what I wanted when I was young, and my parents said no. So I said, go for it. Go do what you want to do. And she struggled a lot. You know, she really did. But I was there for her. My husband was there for her, and now she's successful in her job. And like I said, she makes more money than I do. So.
So you're confident they'll be okay.
I am. Yeah. I really am.
So I mean, it's probably an obvious question, and you've answered it in a sort of a longish way. But what does work mean to you?
There are days when I don't want to do it, and sometimes we wake up. And the first thing out of my mouth is, I don't want to play restaurant today. Mm. And you just don't want to do it. But the people that are coming in don't really care how I feel. They know they want their meatball. And they know they want their omelet. They want their coffee. They want their pancakes. They want their sandwich. And my job is to give it to them. And as a result, I get to pretty much do whatever I want. Mm. When I don't want to make this certain object anymore, I take it off the menu. I don't want to cook that anymore. And it's off the menu. So to me, this is freedom. I could work for somebody else and they could tell me what to do and I'd be miserable. Or I could say to myself, look, you put yourself in this situation. I didn't have to spend all my money and open a restaurant. I could have invested wisely and gotten a job. I don't like to work for people. And I don't want anybody to tell me what to do. So to me, this type of job, this is freedom. And I kind of feel like if I was a writer or a painter, I would feel the same way. You can do whatever you want.
No. So in the work that you do, can you tell me what are the three qualities that are the most important to run a successful restaurant?
Humility, which does not come easy to me. I think very highly of myself.
As one should.
I know. Patience, because no one is ever going to do it exactly the way I want it to be done. And I have to be willing to let some things go. You know, you got to pick and choose the hill you want to die on. Mm-hmm. And do I want to die on the fact that that particular hill doesn't have enough parsley on it? Or do I want to die on the fact that that chicken's not cooked? You know, I have to let some things go. And you need to have a sense of humor. In this, you absolutely need to have a sense of humor. And if I could say four, you need eyes in the back of your head so that I could see what he's doing right now. And I hear them cleaning the slicer in the kitchen, and all I'm saying is, please, God, let them have that thing unplugged and make sure they're doing it the right way. But I'm not going to go back there and check.
Right, because you have to have confidence in your stuff.